All right, what is your question?
Yesterday, I was watching a program in defense.
You are watching a program. Go ahead.
A person is lying in a coma, you know, right?
Yeah.
And what can we do to help out the person? And the answer I heard from one of the prodigies there was the just chant the Hare Krishna mantra. While he's in a coma, they said he's conscious, you know, the Atma is still...
Yeah, he's not dead, he's not left the body.
So the Atma will listen to that and it will be the best thing you can do for that.
Yes, I agree. I agree. You can also Ganges water. You can put Tulsi, a garland from the deity. So yes, the sound vibration of Krishna's holy name is transcendental. It is not dependent on a material senses to appreciate. The sound vibration will still act, even if somebody's in a coma. Yes. Again, you got anything better you want to do? Something is better than nothing.
No, that is true, but I guess the only thing I'm confused is why you in a coma, the Atma is fully alert.
Yeah, because there is a complete distinction between the Atma and the material bodily mechanism. They're completely two different things. As long as the body is alive, coma doesn't mean dead. Coma just means that the consciousness is not being exhibited, but the soul is still there. Because if the soul is no longer there, then the body's dead. Coma does not mean death.
But then at that point,
so the sound vibration transcends the material body and enters the soul. And super soul. Super soul hears it. Just because the person's in a coma doesn't mean super soul's in a coma. Okay? Yes. So therefore, yes, the benefit is there. The benefit is there.
You see, Prabhupada, you know, the example comes in Abhimanyu. When he was in the womb, he heard Krishna saying how to get in the Chakravyuh, but mother fell asleep, so he didn't hear how to come back, come out.
Well,
same thing.
No, Parikshit was in the womb.
No, Prabhu, we are talking about Abhimanyu when. I think it was Krishna who was explaining how to...
Arjuna was explaining to his wife that how to get out, how I do this whole thing.
Okay, I'm not aware of this.
Okay.
But there's the story of...
And then also Shukadev.
Yes, Shukadev was in the womb of his mother.
And
Krishna came and spoke to Shukadev in the womb because Shukadev didn't want to come out. Because he said, if I come out, I'll fall into illusion. And Krishna said, no, don't worry. You won't fall into illusion. So Shukadev, upon hearing Krishna, decided to come out of the womb. And the same with Prahlad, in the womb of his mother, heard the instructions of Narada, even though he was in the womb of the mother. So transcendental sound vibration is not hampered by any material situation. Not hampered. I'll give you another example. We go out on the street chanting and dancing. Some people go like this. Right? So even they block their ears, too bad. They came in contact. It goes there. Yes, I call this spiritual terrorism. You're very welcome. What about you? Question?
No.
Any questions?
I guess I have one question during the chapter. You said there's the enjoyment.
what gives the enjoyment?
Okay, so if you're talking about God as the enjoyer, He enjoys love. When, okay, first of all, He's Atmaram. He is self-satisfied. He has Srimati Radharani constantly with Him to give Him enjoyment. She is called Hladini Shakti, pleasure potency. Krishna, God is such, He thinks of something, it manifests. Wouldn't you love to be able to do that? You think of something, boom, there it is. That's God. Now, there is a phrase in the Vedas, Eko Bahusyam. The self-satisfied God expanded Himself to increase His enjoyment. That is us. We are existing with the idea to increase His enjoyment. But free will. It's a B. You know, I was going to say something, but you know what I was going to say. Can't force it. So what does God enjoy? When you, out of your free will, say, God, you're cool, man. I want to follow you. Your intention, your free will, being devoted to Him, that's what He enjoys. Now, you and me, how do we enjoy in this material world? We enjoy in this material world when we try to imitate. Now, what does it mean to imitate God? In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, I do three things. I am the enjoyer of everything, all the energy. I am the proprietor, and I am everyone's best friend. So, everyone in the material world, to a lesser or greater degree, is trying to exploit the material resources, right? Even though someone's a billionaire, he wants another billion. Everybody is, you know, people are working, but what's the intent? The day will come when I can retire and just play golf. I mean, there's hundreds and hundreds and thousands of ways of enjoying in this material. You enjoy with your senses. You want to see beautiful things. You want to hear nice music. You want to taste good food. You want to touch, right? So there's unlimited ways to enjoy. So this energy is here. God has given this material energy. Go ahead, enjoy it, right? And we want to be the controller. We want to be the boss. We want to lord it over others. I want to walk in. All right, hey, you do this. You do this. Right? And then everybody wants everyone else to love them. You want to be the central figure. Walk into the room. Oh, Narottara has arrived. These are the three psychic things of how people try to imitate God. So, as I said at the very beginning, we're not really fit for the job. So, what will happen? I'm trying to be the enjoyer, I'm trying to be the proprietor, I'm trying to be everybody's friend. The day comes, you know what? It's just not happening. It's not working. I tried. Then you come and you realize, you know what? I'm just going to surrender to Krishna. That's the decision I made back in 1973. I realized, you know what? I'm beating my head against the wall. I'm trying hard. It's not happening. Then I read these books and it made total sense to me. I decided to give up trying to be the enjoyer. And I'm much more... I'm still doing music. This is what I wanted to do. I wanted to be Elvis Presley. That was what I wanted. So now I'm a spiritual Elvis. Am I doing all right?
Yes.
Hey, you have that on your car.
All right. So, yes, this is a question I get all the time from our good friend Rambhai Singhania. Same question. That I'm a parent. How can I be humble being a parent? Because sometimes with your children, you have to chastise. You know, I mean, you may have the most ideal kids, I'm sure. All you, your kids are ideal, but there was the occasion once or twice when you had to get on their case, right? So, you remain humble because you're doing these things, you're instructing them or correcting them or even getting angry, but it's anger out of love and concern for them. Not because of your own ego. I always give the example of Yashoda. When baby Krishna was a big nonsense, he broke the butter pot, was giving the butter to the monkeys. Yashoda had the stick, and she showed Krishna the stick. But Yashoda was not angry out of her own prestige. Her concern was, if I don't bring up Krishna properly, then later on in life he's not going to be a good man. I even mentioned that a little while ago. Without the training of parents, teachers, right? Children don't grow up properly.
What? In the workplace. I mean, this is the parent.
In the workplace. Okay, in the workplace, Bhagavad Gita comes right in. You have a right to perform your prescribed duty. So, you're dealing with, are you the boss or you're just a co-worker?
No, I'm nothing.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
Okay, in terms of other co-workers, you still have to be humble. You may have to point out to your superior, hey, you know what? This person is doing this, 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 and this. But you do it not out of ego, but you do it out of compassion, love, and care. See, it all depends on the intention. I'll give you another example. So whether it's in the, or say you're the boss. So when you're the boss, it's not that because I'm the boss, now I get to be, you know, bad. No. A real good boss is also humble. Now, the boss may have to let somebody go or may have to correct someone. But again, it's done out of a sense of concern, respect, humility. I've told people hundreds of times, you can go through any situation in life, no matter how difficult, if you remain meek and humble, but you do your duty, that's all. How the other person accepts, you have no control.
But usually humbleness is considered like how you talk, you know, very like respectful, nicely, but inside could be something different, right? But usually on the outside, when we see a person and we say, oh, this person is really humble, nice, and I could be the bad one talking with a very loud and harsh voice and say, oh, this is really terrible.
It can be. So, how can I explain?
Intention.
Here's like this. Again, Yashoda showed that she was angry. She showed, and Krishna was afraid of seeing his mother. He knew she was angry. So she showed anger, but again, her whole mood was love. And if you love, humility is there with love. If there's no humility, there's no love. So even though she's showing a particular emotion, still she's coming from a place of love and humility. Yes? But you have no control over how someone else receives. Free will is a... See, that's the thing.
So inside you, you should know.
You should know, yes. Inside you should know. First you check yourself. Wait a second. What is my intention here? That's why one of the things I learned when I was in administration at the temple... I was vice president. So, one of the first things I was taught, don't react. When things go, first consider. Get all the facts, and then do things intelligently. Now, sometimes you do have to act quick, depending on the situation. But, if you have this core understanding that you are the humble servant of God, that will pretty much carry through everything you do in life. Fair enough? Yes, boss. All right, but was it okay what I said? Okay. Good.
My question was, what kind of bothers me about the whole system is, if God created this world basically to be loved and to be enjoyed, He created this world for us to exist to serve Him, then why did He make the system such that we do seek pleasure and enjoyment and we want to be like Him, we want to create? Why does that always go good? It's as simple as, why does chocolate cake taste good?
Okay. Let's go back to why it all began. Originally, we were in the kingdom of God. Originally. The day came, we indicated we wanted to imitate. God says, oh, you want to imitate? It can't happen here. I will create a world where you can imitate me. It's called Chino Hills. So that I said that at the very beginning. We have all come here because we want to imitate God. So with that premise, that explains everything, because everybody is out for themselves. That's why cooperation is such a rare, beautiful thing, because the nature is everybody is basically out for themselves to lesser or greater degrees. Why do marriages fail? Marriages fail because one of the two parties stops trying to serve the other. That's why marriages fail. One of the two decides, you know what? You ain't cutting it. I'm going to do something else. I've spoken at engagements and marriages, and I always tell the couple, you will do fine as long as each of you see that you are the other's servant. If you have that mentality, you'll have smooth sailing. But as soon as I stop seeing that I am the servant of my wife, and I start to think, no, she is meant to do this, then it's going to start. It's going to start. So, now, your other point, why does chocolate cake taste so good? Because we want an imitation spiritual world. So God says, okay, I'm going to make this world, there's going to be enjoyments, and there's also going to be suffering. And because that's another question. Why does God make their suffering? Why can't it just be all be happy? You already were there. That was called the spiritual world. We didn't want it. So He makes this world a world of duality where, ooh, that chocolate cake is so good, but if you eat the whole cake, right? So what happens? Material enjoyment is limited. You take too much anything, too much eating, drinking, right? You can have one glass of wine, you're okay. But if you drink too much, then get in your car, pull over. Right? Right? It's on the TV all the time. Right? So, this material world, you're allowed limited pleasures, and as soon as you go over the limit, suffering. So the question is, why? Why suffering? Because God says, if I don't make it suffering, you're never going to come back. You follow? And we already had the perfect place, but we were not satisfied. No, is that the God want? No. We made the choice.
So it's a cause and effect.
Cause and effect in this world. But who set up the matrix? No. We didn't set up the... That's the point. God set up the matrix. Hey, you're allowed to choose door number one, door number two, door number three or door number four. But after you choose the door, then that's... So that's why you have to read Bhagavad Gita so that you know which door to choose.
How about living balancedly? You know, like balance in between. Going to Disneyland is not bad. Go and have fun. But at least go to temple too.
So yes.
Going there is not...
Even going to Vegas. Believe me, I go to Vegas. I go, I have fun. I do all those bad things too, but I don't think
that... Krish!
Even driving on Vegas Boulevard, if I'm listening to the song, if you listen in my car, it's like religious. And there's one time, this party was visiting from India, and they said, wow, my sister and her husband, and she said, you guys come to this Vegas, what is this terrible place? And I said, oh, you know what, listen to the song that's playing in my car.
Okay.
Yes, another topic.
No, I want to hear your opinion.
Of what? Opinion on what?
Balance.
Okay. So, there are two paths in the Vedas. Pravritti and Nivritti. So, you're espousing Pravritti. The path of Pravritti is regulated sense enjoyment. But you will not get liberation on the path of Pravritti. So you may live your balanced life, enjoying chocolate cake and Las Vegas, but you will have to take birth again and again and again until you enter the path of Nivritti. The path of Nivritti is the path of decreasing chocolate cake and Las Vegas and increasing spiritual activities. And when the chocolate cake and the Las Vegas is completely gone, and all that remains is spiritual activities, then you get your moksha. Yes? So? But there's another kind of desire.
Yeah, remembering God.
Yeah.
Even I'm eating chocolate cake or I'm in Vegas, if I can still remember Him, but how is that?
So, if you really, really, really understand Krishna or God, then the symptom is you have no more interest in chocolate cake and Las Vegas. Right now, you have some interest in God, and you also have a taste for material enjoyment. That's what pravritti marg is. All right. So like I said, you call it a balance, fine. You're allowed that. But keep in mind, you're going to have to take birth again in this material world. For instance, I'm sure the youngsters know, the Wizard of Oz. We know the Wizard of Oz. So at the end, the good witch of the north told Dorothy, you had the power all along to go home. And so Dorothy had to click her heels 3 times and chant the mantra, there's no place like home. There's no place like home. She couldn't stay in Oz and be home. She had to choose Oz or home. And she said goodbye to the Tin Man and everybody because she wanted to go home. So if you want to go home to Krishna, you have to say goodbye to chocolate cake in Las Vegas. So the desire becomes, I want Krishna and nothing else. That quality of the desire, not the, like I said, you heard correctly. I'm very glad that you heard me last week. So that's the question. What is your desire? As long as you have other desires other than Krishna, Krishna says, okay, take another birth. Go ahead. But when you have become resolute, no more. Krishna, I want you. Then Krishna says, come on. Welcome back. We've been waiting for you. Fair enough? Pretty cool. You want to stay here? He lets you stay. You want to come back? Come on back. Choices? Is he interfering with your choice? No. He's not interfering. But what you choose, he's helping you. Yes? Krishna says, if you surrender, he tears up your karma. That's why I always say Krishna is the ultimate bailout program. Prabhupada even said, me, I was not born in an Indian family. I was born in a Malecha Yavana family. So my karmic account could fill up rooms, right? The karma I should have gotten. That's why I got that little accident. I deserved so much worse. Instead, I just get a little accident. The karma is reduced. Otherwise, a guy like me, if you had seen me before this, you wouldn't believe it. All right? So I had lots of karma. But by surrendering to Krishna, the account is taken care of. Fair enough? Yes. Yes.
Before surrendering, what's the stage? I mean, you have to believe in him, in the faith, and then surrender, right? I mean, you just don't jump to surrender, right?
You can't.
It could happen. See, first of all, you already have exposure. You already know a lot of things. You were born Indian, yes? Okay. You are coming from a very, very advantageous situation, which you have earned over millions of lifetimes. Now, you're at a certain stage of development, which you have expressed. Okay, but you are very, very close. In your case, it may take a particular incident where you were like, bam. Or usually, which is what I said earlier, you may one day meet someone who will actually touch your heart. I'm not pure enough to touch your heart. But you may one day meet someone who is able to touch your heart. So it'll either come in the form of a saintly person who is actually able to touch your heart, or it may be an incident arranged by Krishna where you, okay, I get it, I get it, I get it. Those are the two scenarios for you. Yeah, someone like me. Someone like me. No, no, no. But before. Before. So in that case, the scenario still is there. The same. It's the same thing. For me, it was coming in contact with Srila Prabhupada. Good enough? Everybody's happy? Only one?
Yeah, I mean, no, because you know how I'm a confused person, very confused. See how, you know, like Arjuna, he had so many questions. I mean, he just couldn't get to it, right? And then chapter 17 or 18, and then he says, okay, I surrender.
18, last one. 18.
No, Arjuna surrendered in chapter 2. Chapter 10, he says, Parang Brahma Parang Dhamma, I accept you. No, at the end he says, I accept everything. But he already in chapter 10 accepted Krishna as supreme.
As spiritual master.
No, supreme. Spiritual master he accepted in chapter 2. Chapter 10 he said, Parang Brahma, you're the supreme spirit. Yeah, because Krishna has said, I'm done talking, now do what you want. Arjuna said, all right, you've convinced me, I'm ready to fight.
So, all his questions were arising before the chapter 10, because he had not surrendered. He was just believing, he was just like, okay, well, because Krishna was his friend, right?
But in chapter 2, the friendship stopped. And Krishna became trainer, guru. Arjuna became submissive. And the teaching started.
So until that stage comes where you are submissive and you're like saying, okay, well, I surrender unto you and nothing's going to happen. I mean, unless... Like,
okay, you and everybody else has karma. Okay? So that karma takes, fructifies over time. Okay? So, how old are you?
I'm 38.
All right, 38. So, many things could happen in the next few years. I have no idea. Many things may happen to you. And as you live your life, with experiences, you're going to get more and more understanding. So, I'll give you an example. I have a disciple in Chile. She's very sincere, but she could not give up onions, could not give up tea, and could not give up garlic. And she wanted to be a serious practitioner. So she was always perplexed. She would always say, Guruji, I want moksha, but unless I give up onions and tea and garlic, it's not going to happen, and I don't see myself giving these things up ever. And she told me, if I try to give up tea, I get a headache. So I told her, I said, you don't worry. These are the only things that are keeping you back. These are not important. You just continue to chant, continue to read, and just stay with me. And she kept saying, no, 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 I'm never going to give up these things. Never. Well, now she's been saying this She became my disciple in 2005. So when I went to see her this year, she had just come back from India. And when she came to my first program, after my lecture, she said, "Guruji, I have something to say." And I was thinking, uh-oh, what's she going to say now? She said, "I have given up tea." And everybody was like, because everybody knows her. Then the next day, she said, "I have given up onions and garlic." It's exactly what I said. When I told her, she said, "It will never happen." But it happened. So, stay, be a good boy. Not so much chocolate cake and Las Vegas. Good boy. And this much I can do. I am not pure enough to touch your heart, but I will bless you that Krishna delivers you. How's that? Now, I've been told many times my blessings come true. So, I am the blesser. That's one of my nicknames. So, after the program, I will give you special blessings. And everybody. Good enough? Is everybody satisfied? Did I make any mistakes? Did I offend anybody? Was that? Oh, please. No, that's what I come once a year for this. Come on.
So if you do live a life devoid of desires and not looking for these enjoyments and devote yourself to Krishna, what is the force that keeps you going day to day? Is it just
Krishna reciprocates. He reciprocates. If you take a conscious step towards Krishna, there should be and there will be an immediate sign, and you'll say, "Whoa." That gives you impetus to go to the next stage. I'll tell you my story. I'm 23. I had just given up. I joined the temple. So joining the temple is like joining the army. You're told what to do from 4 o'clock in the morning to 10 o'clock. Now you sweep this. Now you do. You're like in the army. So they said, "Now today you're going to go out on the street with the other devotees and you're going to chant." So we're on 5th Avenue or 47th Street, New York City. Okay? I've got the robes. I've got the shaven head. And I thought, "Oh, we're going to chant 1 hour. And it was like, I was thinking, boy, these guys are nuts. I've been chanting 1 hour and these guys want to go for another 2? So I was starting to think, "Oh man, I can't make it in the music. I can't even make it as a Hare Krishna." So I was really freaking out. I didn't know what was going to happen. I said, "I can't do this." So I was just about to quit. I was really, literally going to walk away. At that moment, all of a sudden, I got this surge of energy. And it was like, "Hari Bol!" And I was able to go for another 2 hours. And I was like, "Where did that come from?" So, throughout your life, Krishna shows you little things. And you know, I've been in so many circumstances and situations. I don't know how I got out of it. But I know how. Because Krishna's hand is there. It's happened so many times. So you will perceive some reciprocation from Krishna. Otherwise it becomes a post-dated or empty check. This is another thing why I like Krishna consciousness. Because I see it. It's not, you know, I'm not espousing something ethereal. I have experience in my life how Krishna... I'll tell you another story. My daughter, All right? One day my wife came to me crying. Your daughter, you have to pray for your daughter. I said, what's going on? So my daughter was 19, 18. She was dating a 45-year-old man. My wife was freaking out. So my wife said to me, pray to Krishna because Krishna hears you. So I said, okay. So I prayed to Krishna. Within 2 weeks, she met her husband, who she's still with, and he's not 45. There was only, you know, 6 or 7 year difference. Because this 45-year-old man had children, he was divorced, and he had nothing, you know, he was nothing to do with spiritual life. But I prayed, and she met her husband, who she married.
That makes perfect sense to me.
Yes.
My real concern was, right now, you know, we all, for our generation, and even for every generation, you go to school, try to get a job, and try to take care of your family, you want them in this house, this and that. That's because you want these enjoyments. If you're devoid of these desires, then why would you even try to get higher educated and make a difference?
You can use those things in Krishna consciousness. You can still, for instance, you can be the owner of a company, but you can be a perfect example of a devotee. Yudhishthira was king, but he was a lover of Krishna. There is an Indian gentleman in his 20s. He's the son of a devotee. He is now a professor in North Carolina. So there are thousands of people just like you. Doctors, lawyers, teachers. They're in the world, but at the same time, they're fully practicing this spiritual life. It's not that everybody has to become a sannyasi. You can see there's two ways of doing it. You're doing it for yourself, or you're doing it to set an example in society. So again, one of the themes is, what is my intention? The selfish person does everything for me, my name, my fame. Donald Trump's a good example, right? Right? Or you can be someone like Yudhishthira, Arjuna, did their material thing perfectly, but at the same time, they lived a very exemplary spiritual life. We're not telling everybody to just stop. No. Start to cultivate your spiritual life. See, this is the real balance that she was talking about. The real balance is, you do your duties in the material world and side by side cultivate your spiritual identity. What path? You mean what business? No, because you can be... Yudhishthira was not a sannyasi. Yudhishthira was king. But Krishna loved Yudhishthira. So, yes, this is a teaching of Bhagavad Gita. Your material path is inconsequential. You can be a shudra. That's all right. You can still achieve perfection. You all know Ram ate... was Shabari, right? Was she a Shudra? But Ram accepted her. So your material position, Krishna doesn't care. What he cares about is what's in your heart. That's what matters. So if you're a king, fine. be the ideal king. If you just want to be an ordinary worker, that's fine. The question is, are you developing your spiritual identity, your spiritual nature? Yes? Yes?
Is it possible for somebody in one verse to do that?
Yes. I will tell you what my spiritual master said. He said, and not just once, every time he initiated someone, you chant the Hare Krishna mantra, live a pure life, following four principles, you will go back to Godhead in this lifetime. Yes. It can happen. Because, like Dorothy, all she had to do, there's no place. She chanted the mantra. So we chant the mantra with all our heart. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And when that is pure, Krishna says, come on, come back. Like I said, everybody's waiting for you in the spiritual world. Everybody's waiting. That's it. They're waiting. Your place is there. Your home is there. Everything is there. Your name is there. Just waiting for you to come on back. You're very welcome. Okay. Batuk?